The humid air of coastal Georgia hung heavy over the quiet streets of the Satilla Shores neighborhood. On that Sunday afternoon, it was the kind of afternoon where the rhythmic sound of sneakers hitting pavement usually signals nothing more than a dedicated athlete finding their stride. Sunlight filtered through the sprawling live oaks and Spanish moss, casting long, shifting shadows across the suburban driveways. Most residents were settled in for a quiet weekend, unaware that the tranquility was about to be shattered by a series of high-speed maneuvers and echoing blasts. The silence of the neighborhood was punctured first by the heavy rumble of a white pickup truck, accelerating suddenly from a driveway. Then came the sound of another vehicle joining the fray, the tires chirping against the asphalt as a pursuit began to take shape between the manicured lawns. There was no siren, no official authority, and no clear reason for the sudden aggression that turned these public roads into a confined corridor of escalating tension. As the chase wound through the residential loops, the sense of isolation grew for the person being pursued. The geography of the neighborhood, with its limited exits and winding turns, became a physical trap. It was here, at the intersection of Satilla Drive and Holmes Drive, that the sequence of events reached its irreversible conclusion. The finality of the moment was marked by three distinct, thunderous reports that left a young man named Ahmaud Arbery collapsed on the pavement. My involvement in the case began with a review of the initial incident reports filed by the Glynn County Police Department. The paperwork described a scene where two men, a father and son, claimed they were performing a citizen's arrest. They told responding officers that they suspected a burglary was in progress and had decided to take action. According to the statements I examined, the father had seen a man running past his house and immediately called out to his son to grab their weapons. They armed themselves with a .357 Magnum and a Remington shotgun before jumping into their truck. The chronological reconstruction showed that this decision was made in a matter of seconds without any verification of a crime. As they pursued the runner, they were joined by a neighbor who saw the chase unfolding and decided to intervene with his own vehicle. My review of the GPS data and witness statements indicated that the chase lasted for nearly 5 minutes. During this window, the three men used their vehicles to box in the runner, forcing him to change direction multiple times. The record showed that the runner was unarmed and had nothing in his hands throughout the entire pursuit. He had been spotted moments earlier, standing inside a house under construction, but the owner later confirmed that nothing had been taken. The lead up to the confrontation was characterized by a complete lack of official communication or legitimate legal grounds for detention. The most critical piece of evidence I had to analyze was the digital recording captured by the third participant in the chase. This video, filmed on a mobile phone from the cab of the following truck, provided a raw and unflinching look at the final seconds. In the footage, the runner is seen attempting to go around the right side of the lead truck, which is stopped in the middle of the road. A man stands at the open driver's side door, holding a shotgun, while another man watches from the bed of the truck with a handgun drawn. As the runner nears the front of the vehicle, he makes a sudden move to engage the man with the shotgun. The first shot is fired at point-blank range, hitting the runner in the chest and causing a visible stagger. A struggle ensues over the barrel of the weapon, a frantic and desperate scramble for control in the center of the road. A second shot echoes, followed quickly by a third, which strikes the runner in the ribs. The technical forensic report confirmed that the shotgun blasts caused massive internal damage and catastrophic blood loss. After the third shot, the runner tries to stay upright for a few more paces before losing consciousness and falling face first. Beyond the video, digital forensics uncovered a series of text messages and social media posts from the defendants. These records revealed a history of racial animus and the use of slurs that spoke to the underlying motivation for the pursuit. The evidence painted a picture not of a lawful arrest, but of a targeted and racially motivated hunt. The legal proceedings that followed were extensive, moving from state murder charges to a subsequent federal hate crimes trial. In the state trial, the prosecution argued that the defendants had no legal right to chase the victim and that their actions directly provoked the fatal struggle. The jury deliberated for 10 hours before returning a verdict that found the father and son guilty of felony murder, with the son also convicted of malice murder. The neighbor was found guilty of felony murder and false imprisonment for his role in trapping the victim. During the sentencing phase, the judge emphasized that the victim had been hunted down on a public street where he had every right to be. The father and son were sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole, plus additional years for the underlying felony counts. The neighbor received a sentence of life, with the possibility of parole, after serving a mandatory minimum of 30 years. Following the state conviction, the federal trial focused on the civil rights violations and the hate crime aspect of the killing. The evidence presented in that phase showed that the defendants would not have made the same assumptions or taken the same actions if the victim had been white. The federal jury found all three men guilty of interference with rights and attempted kidnapping. This resulted in additional life sentences for the father and son, and a 35-year sentence for the neighbor to run concurrently with the state terms. The case concluded with the repeal of the state's 19th-century citizens' arrest law, ensuring that such actions could no longer be used as a legal shield for private violence.